And thanks a lot for inviting me to participate in this really wonderful get-together of people from both the math and physics communities. That's really special. So everything that I'm going to talk about is going to be sort of based on joint work with Ludmil Kazarkov. Alexander Noll and Carlos Simpson. So let me begin by, so my title has WKB analysis in it, but I think it will be sort of slightly orthogonal to what we saw in the previous talk, because we came to this subject from a sort of very different angle. So I want to sort of, today I'll sort of introduce our motivation for studying the kind of structures we studied. But before that, let me just plunge right in and draw a picture of the kind of objects that we want to study. Okay, so let me situate ourselves. So we are going to work on a surface. S is going to be from your surface. It's not necessarily compact. Without boundary and without any decorations. So at some point we may need to specify some extra decorations or say that the surface is compact, but if I don't say anything, it's just a surface. Okay, so typical thing might look like that. Some higher genus surface is perfectly acceptable. However, for most of what I'm going to say, just look, considering the case where S is the complex line will be already interesting. So you can keep that example in mind for a lot of the stuff that I will say. So what are the sort of structures that we're going to look at? You already saw some pictures of them in the previous talk. So if you have a surface, you can draw foliations on the surface. So here's a picture of a foliation. It's a particularly nice kind of foliation because a general foliation can be a very wild object. So here's a picture of a very nice foliation. And if I have a foliation, I can construct from it another object which records some information about the foliation, which is the leaf space of the foliation. So maybe I pick another color. So the space of leaves of the foliation is going to look like that. Okay. So I said my foliation is quite nice and well-behaved and special. In fact, it's not going to come from, it's not going to be an arbitrary foliation. It's going to be a foliation that comes from a quadratic differential. So I'm going to have a complex structure on my surface. It's going to, I will explain in just a moment. Thanks. So X is going to be a Riemann surface, so a surface with complex structure, and this foliation is going to come from a quadratic differential. So this foliation F is going to depend, is going to come from a quadratic differential, where so phi is a section so locally it looks something like phi of z is q of z dz squared, so, or abstractly phi is a section of omega x squared. So So that's what makes the behavior of this foliation controlled. It's controlled by holomorphic geometry, which makes it quite rigid. So I've decorated this picture with all sorts of colors, and there's a reason for that. You can observe that if you look at the red lines on the right-hand side, which I actually should. This red piece here consists of four parts. It consists of three leaves, which are one-dimensional, and one zero-dimensional leaf, right? And what makes this these three leaves special is that the closure of this one-dimensional leaf contains a leaf of lower dimension. If you look at any other leaf, the closure does not contain any other. The closure is itself. So these are the singular leaves. And I should have said, well, I really have three leaves here, but I've drawn only one point in the image for the image of this, you know, for those three leaves. So this thing here is really the Hausdorffification of X mod F of the leaf space. Okay, so I would really have four leaves for these four points, but they all become one point because I need to Hausdorffify the space. And the space of singular leaves is exactly H inverse of these two red points, which are precisely the singularity, the singular points in the tree. So these are precisely, this is H inverse of the singularities to call this guy T. Okay. And this thing is, it has some additional structure, as you can see in this picture, which will also be true generally, is that this is a tree. I'll define what that, all that is a little later. What else can we observe in this picture? One thing that we can observe is that This map H is a map between two, well, it's a map from a manifold to a metric space. I don't have a chosen metric on my Riemann surface, but I do have a chosen conformal structure. So I can ask whether this map is harmonic. And in fact, it is, because if you think of what the differential of H is, so let's just forget for a moment about the singular points and look at some region that maps into an interval, then the differential of H, if I pull back, say, a coordinate function xi. So each of these edges has a coordinate function xi, which is well, x, maybe just x, which is well defined up to replacing x by minus x. So I can pull back the differential, I can calculate dh upper star of x, and this is nothing but the real part of the square root of phi. So maybe I didn't say what the foliation defined by a quadratic differential is. This foliation is the foliation real part of plus minus square root of phi equal to 0. Okay. So the differential of this map, wherever it is defined, is just the real part of a holomorphic form, and therefore it's harmonic. So of course, I'm hiding a lot of theory behind that. So we all know what a harmonic map between Riemannian manifolds is. It turns out you can extend the whole theory to spaces, to singular target spaces. And I don't want to get into the technicalities of that theory. But in practice, for us, what it will mean is that there will be some finitely many singular points. And away from those singular points, my Riemann surface will actually map into something which is non-singular. So I can single out one copy of a real line. And so I really have a map from a small open set into some copy of, into this open set here, which is a map from, if I call this U, this open set. Maybe I should have marked it in a color again. I'm running out of colors, so let's just go with yellow. If this is U, then this really maps to this open set U prime, which is inside R. And H restricted to U is just a good old harmonic function in the sense of ordinary function theory. Well, because of a function is harmonic, at least locally harmonic, so maybe I'm... A function is locally harmonic if its differential is a harmonic one form. That's a characterization, if you like, of harmonic maps. So any globally harmonic map which minimizes energy will be locally harmonic in this sense. Yeah, of the square root of this quadratic differential. Yeah, so you're right. I mean, globally, the square roots won't be defined. The square roots, yeah, the square, I'm taking the real part of the square roots. The square roots won't be defined globally, but locally, they're defined. But that's all I need to say what the foliation is, right? Yeah. No. The square roots will, if I change my trivialization, all that can happen is that plus and minus get interchanged. Yeah. Right. You're asking, you pair, what is this, maybe the issue is what does the expression really mean, right? It means, so f sub phi, f, what is f? F sub phi is some sitting inside the tangent bundle of x. And when does, the question you want to ask is when does a vector belong to this? And v is in f sub phi if the real part of the square root of phi paired with v is 0. Pick any square root. There are two square roots at every point. Sorry, it was not. So I mean, a foliation is some set of tangent vectors. So, OK, are there any other questions about this? Sorry? paired with. So maybe another way to say this is that, I'll say it in a moment. I was going to say in a moment that a quadratic differential will be a spectral cover, which is some two-sheeted cover, and okay, if everything is clear. OK. So this already contains all of the main features that I want to generalize. What do I want to generalize to? I want to generalize it to higher rank. I'll say in a moment what that means. But before we do that, I want to look at what happens when I vary the quadratic differential. Okay, so for generic values of phi, it's going to look like this. But if I vary phi, there will be special values where I can have a situation that looks like this, which we saw in the morning talk as well. And as we vary the quadratic differential, we can ask whether we can read off the fact that I have this non-generic situation, the appearance of this line connecting two turning points from the tree itself, right? And you can, because the tree will just become, will degenerate and will have a vertex of variance C4, which is not a generic phenomenon. And when you cross the wall, when you continue moving your quadratic differential, you again regenerate that edge which you collapsed. So this thing here, this line, is a saddle connection, which I'll also call a BPS state for reasons that will be apparent to those who know about BPS states, and I really won't be defining what a BPS state is. Okay. So what happens when I cross this, if I continue moving my quadratic differential, well, at some point you can imagine that things will look something like this. And the tree would have undergone a mutation. You see, in going from here to here, this edge of the tree has been shrunk down to a vertex, and you will regenerate that vertex in a different direction. Okay, so let's label these pictures 1, 2, and 3. So I can refer to them later. So this in going from 1 to 2 to 3 is an example. Is an example of wall crossing. Okay. Now, of course, that's a meaningless statement. All I did was draw a picture which mutates and say that some wall has been crossed. But I'll make more precise in which sense this is wall crossing, which is what motivated our work. So there's one of the reasons for the whole approach I'm going to describe is trying to understand the relation between two kinds of wall crossing phenomena. There's one kind of wall crossing phenomena which happens in the world of differential equations, WKB analysis. And that's related to the Stokes phenomenon. And there's another kind of wall crossing phenomena which happens in non-commutative algebraic geometry, if you like, where you cross some walls in the space of stability conditions. Or in physics language, which I don't know too well, you can describe it as these BPS states appearing when you change some parameter in some quantum field theory. So one of the motivations was to understand the relation between these two kinds of wall crossing phenomena. Okay? And this is a baby version of wall crossing, and this is a baby version of a BPS state that I want to talk about. Okay. Okay, maybe I'll have to erase this at some point. Okay, so what are my goals? Maybe I'll say one more word about these foliations before I go on to my goals. So what's the generic picture look like? So away from the zeros of phi, you can always straighten out the foliation. So you can choose a coordinate. W, which is the integral of, you just choose one square root locally. Choose a base point and integrate the square root of phi from that base point to z. And this gives a local coordinate which maps your open set into C with coordinate W, and your foliation gets mapped to the horizontal foliation, real part of W equal to 0. And furthermore, you get a flat structure. So the metric on C induces a flat metric on the complement of or let me just say on U. Okay. So you have a flat structure, a metric given by pulling back the metric from C. What happens near a turning point? You can completely classify those as well. If near a turning point of order k, you can choose coordinates so that phi of z looks like z to the k dz squared. And the picture of the foliation looks like a k plus 2 pronged version of this picture. So this is a simple zero, so you have a three-pronged picture. But near a zero of order k, you'd have k plus 2 prongs. Have some space. So what are my goals? What do I want to understand about these foliations? So the first thing is to explain what these pictures and in particular the map to the tree tells us about an equation like this, like the Schrodinger equation. Okay. And then I want to tell you what higher rank generalizations of all these structures are. And the analog of one, of the first, of the relationship between higher order differential equations and the higher order analogs of these pictures. So are there any questions? Before I do any of that, I want to tell you, maybe I'll do one first, and then I want to give you some more motivation for considering all these things. So let's look at the Schrodinger equation. And I'm going to do something very naive, nothing as sophisticated as doing the Borel resummation and so on. I just want to revisit some simple aspects of the WKB approximation for this equation. Actually, let me write this differently, sorry. So I want to write the equation, the Schrodinger equation, as you can think of the classical equation right, which is the level sets of, so this defines if you think of P as a coordinate on Px, in the cotangent bundle, and this defines a curve. Let me call this h of xp. And h of xp equal to 0 contained in the cotangent bundle defines a curve sigma which projects to x. Right? I'm going to call this a spectral cover. And the Schrodinger equation is what you get by sort of quantizing this thing, by replacing, sending p to square root of minus 1 d dx, and x to multiplication by x, whatever that means. I think you'll hear more about it in the next talk, probably how to quantize a curve. And you get the equation h at psi equal to 0, which is the Schrodinger equation. And what the classical WKB approximation tells you is that you can find a solution. So think of h bar as a formal parameter. Then you can find a solution that looks like a of x naught. Sorry, a of x times e raised to the square root of minus 1 times s of x, where s of x is some solution to the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. Right? I'm not saying in what sense I mean approximate. That's precisely something that I want to leave out for the moment and make that precise a little later. But what is the upshot of this? Is that the asymptotic behavior as h bar goes to 0 of this function is controlled by the spectral cover To find the solution, all I had to know was the equation of the spectral cover, and I'm solving that equation. So the asymptotic behavior of my quantum solution is governed as h bar goes to 0 by some classical data, which is the spectral cover. And so this is a sense in which, of course, quantum mechanics becomes classical mechanics when you send h bar to 0. Thank you. So locally, the solutions will look like, if I spell that out, it means that solutions look like that. Okay. Now, going back to my previous picture, I claim that what I was telling you about was exactly a picture of this sort, right? This quantity two m v of x minus e dx squared is the same thing, is a quadratic differential, which is the thing I was calling phi. The square roots are the thing that I'm calling the momentum p here. Oh, sorry, I left out the h bar again. Everything is one dimensional, so complex one dimensional. Of course, the classical story which W, K, and B looked at, Wenzel, Kremers, and Bruno, was for real parameters. But then it's very natural to just replace x by a complex parameter and let x vary even over some Riemann surface. So x is here a parameter varying over a Riemann surface, a, which I'm calling capital X. No, it's not an R3 or anything. Yeah. So this is just motivation. So I want to reformulate this in a more geometric way. And I want to try to make precise in, I mean, when you say something is approximately true, there are many ways. It really always depends on what you want to do with it, right? How good you want your approximation to be depends on what your goals are. So I'm going to formulate a precise sense in which I want that approximation to be true, and I'm going to make it a geometric statement about something geometric. So let's look, let's do something we all learn in high school, which is when you have a second order equation, you can make it a first order matrix equation. So let's take h bar times, let's put psi 1. So introduce psi 1, which is h bar times psi, and psi 2 is h bar times psi 1 prime. Then you can rewrite this equation, the Schrodinger equation, as a linear matrix equation, where A of z is the matrix I switched between x and z because I here x, I wanted to go back to the sort of classical quantum mechanical story. So x was a real parameter, but now x is complex again. So A of z is this 2x2 matrix, and you can see that the trace of A of z is 0. So what is this gadget d plus a defining? It's defining a connection. So h bar, nabla sub h bar, equal to h bar d plus a is a SL2C connection on the trivial bundle. Okay. So solving the Schrodinger equation is like asking for flat sections of this connection on the trivial bundle. Well, that immediately suggests a generalization, which is to look at, well, now I don't have to work on C, and I don't have to work with rank 2 equations. I can immediately formulate an analog of this whole problem in complete generality. So let X be a Riemann surface. Let E be a holomorphic. Rank R vector bundle. And suppose that Rth power is trivialized. And suppose you have a connection, a given connection, which in our case was played, the role of the fixed connection, nabla 0, is played by the differentiation operator D. And I'm going to have some phi, which is the role of phi is played by the matrix A of z. This is going to be an endomorphism valued one form, also known as a Higgs field, such that the trace of phi is 0. In this situation, I can, if I'm given all of this data, I can construct a family of connections depending on a small parameter. Okay. And when I have a bunch of connections, what can I do with them? I can solve for their flat sections, or in other words, produce the monodromy representation. In this situation, I get a family of transport operators, as I'll call them, which would be maps from the fundamental groupoid of X, or if you like, the fundamental group, into a category of vector spaces, or if you like, if you fix a base point, you can think of this as representations in the group SLRC. Where this transport gamma of H bar is a map from the fiber at of gamma at 0 to the fiber at of gamma over gamma 1. Right? Now, I want to formulate a question about, you know, in what sense this approximation is precise in terms of this transport operator. So fix, I want to ask how fast does the transport operator grow as h bar goes to 0 when, yeah. If I let the parameter h bar go to 0, I want to analyze how the transport operator goes to infinity. So fix a norm, fix a Hermitian metric, h on E, and then define the WKB exponent nu of gamma is defined by the following formula. Nu of gamma is the lim sup as h bar goes to 0 of the norm of the transport operator. So it's a function from, nu is a function from this fundamental groupoid into the real numbers. Some number I can associate to every path in my manifold. Now, what has all this got to do with the WKB approximation? If you look at this approximate formula, you can guess what the WKB exponent should be in a region where the WKB approximation is valid. You should expect that the WKB exponent is simply given by integrating P of x dx. Let lambda 1 through lambda r be the eigenforms of phi. Right? So what was phi? Phi was an endomorphism valued one form. If I have an endomorphism, I can calculate its eigenvalues, their numbers. But this is an endomorphism with values in one form. So its eigenvalues will be one forms. So lambda 1 through lambda r will be holomorphic one forms but of course, they're not globally defined, because it's like a multivalued holomorphic one form, right? So I'll make this precise in a second. But for now, let's just pretend they're one forms. So what will the WKB approximation suggest? It suggests that as a first approximation would be that nu of gamma should be the integral of the real part of lambda I, let's call this lambda largest, over gamma. So this is an this is a matrix whose entries are one forms.
Yes, okay. I understand why it's a matrix. I understand the NP part, but there was only the one.
Oh, what does the expression mean?
No, I understand, but I don't understand why P belongs to that times omega 1 x,
yeah,
rather than just to n.
Phi belongs here by definition. Phi by definition is an element here. Maybe your question is, why do I want it to be here? I want it to be here because I want to say that I start with a connection lambda 0, and I want to produce a whole bunch of new connections. I want to go to infinity in the space of connections by modifying a given connection. But we know that the space of connections is a torsor for the space of endomorphism valued one forms. So if I have some other connection nabla, then the difference is going to belong to and I'll make precise in a second in what sense I mean the eigenvalues are one forms. It's the correct way to say it is that the eigenvalues of a Higgs field give a spectral cover of your Riemann surface. Ah, yeah, I am, sorry. Thanks. Oh, sorry, I really messed this up. Where did I put that? Ah, there it is. Yeah, thanks a lot. That's formula is quite wrong. So what we want this formula to say is we wanted to say that where's the function that I want? We want to say the transport operator as a function of h bar, that this grows like e raised to nu over h bar. Okay? So working backwards, that means that I want this to be log of h bar times norm of the transport operator. Thanks a lot. Right. So if you look at the WKP approximation, your first guess for a first approximation of what mu of gamma might be is that suppose you could order your eigenvalues so that the real part of lambda 1 dominates all of the rest. Then this approximation would suggest that, you know, the higher version of that approximation would suggest that this WKP exponent should be just given by integrating along a path the real part of the largest eigenvalue. Okay? This is, of course, just a guess. It's not the right answer. And I'm going to tell you how to compute, when this is really true, how to make this precise, and in what sense it is true, and so on. Yeah, I will. So all this is very vague motivation. Let's get more precise. So while making this precise, I also want to give you some more motivation, because I just gave you some definition of a number called the WKP exponent out of the blue, and you might very well ask, why do I care about this number, right? What's good about it? And well, one of the reasons we care about it is it's really about compactifying the non-abelian Hodge correspondence. Okay, so that's what I want to explain now. So let's fix up, we're in the same context as before, so X is a Riemann surface. Yeah, sure. Just call it. So if I have X a Riemann surface, I can associate to it three different kinds of objects. Okay, one is of purely topological nature. It doesn't depend on the complex structure. So first one is what I call M Betti of X. This is just the space of representations of the fundamental group of X. And I'm going to fix some group, so let's fix and for me it's going to be SLRC today, but you could do this for any other group. And I want to look at all representations into SLRC modulo conjugation by SLRC. So of course, this thing is, what kind of an object is this? It's a set, but it has much more structure than that. It's an algebraic variety because I can write pi 1 of x in terms of generators and relations. And I'm just writing a bunch of matrices which satisfy those generators and relations. And so you can obviously write coordinates on that space. So this is an affine algebraic variety. Then the second thing you can associate is M diram of x, the diram moduli space of x, which is going to be the space of connections. So holomorphic connections. Modulo some notion of equivalence, which I'm not going to get into, but you can define this moduli space, and it's also an algebraic variety. Okay? So also an algebraic variety. And the third one is the moduli space of Higgs bundles, which is going to really depend on the holomorphic structure. Yeah, sorry. If you like, I mean, for me, this is just a vector bundle with connection. You can do the whole thing with principal bundles if you like. But I think for my purposes today, it's going to be just vector bundles is good enough. So, and then you have the moduli space of Higgs bundles, which is the space of pairs E phi, which where phi is an endomorphism value, one form. Again, modulo equivalence. Okay. So these, all of these can be constructed as some GIT quotients in algebraic geometry. So they exist as algebraic varieties. The important thing to note is that the first one is purely topological. It only depends on the fundamental group of x. M Higgs, on the other hand, is a purely holomorphic object. It really depends in a very strong way on the holomorphic structure. Everything is holomorphic. Yeah. So what is the content of non-abelian Hodge theory? Well, the content of usual Hodge theory is that you can identify something purely topological, which is Diram cohomology, with something which is defined using holomorphic data, which is Dolbeau cohomology, which is the space of PQ forms. This is a non-abelian analog of that, where you're replacing first Diram cohomology by representations of the fundamental group, right, which is something non-abelian. So non-abelian Hodge theory, and there's lots of people to name here, goes back to Hitchin. I'm sure I'll miss out lots of names, but Hitchin, Simpson, Collette, etc. Says that these spaces are identified as topological spaces. So they're homeomorphic. But they're not isomorphic as not even as not as algebraic varieties. This is bundles up to S equivalence. I mean, if you can formulate this as a GIT problem, and then you can ask what is the relevant notion of equivalence that you get from it, and it will be something called S equivalence. There are two stratifications, which filtrations, which have the same associated gradient. But for what I'm going to say today, it's not going to matter, so I don't want to get into this. But then, so you start with all Higgs bundles, and you want to identify two things which are isomorphic, right? So you get some big space on which you want to take the quotient by identifying two things when they're isomorphic. But then the quotient will not be an algebraic variety on the nose, so you need to take the quotient in the sense of GIT. And that will identify further certain things which are non-equivalent. That's the picture. But I don't want to get into defining which things will get identified. You can think of it as bundles with up to isomorphism, where you pull back the Higgs field. Yeah. So what is the map from, I'm saying that these are identified as topological spaces, but not, which is of course a very difficult theorem. We know what this identification is. This is the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence. Actually, maybe I draw the arrow the other way. What does it do? It takes a connection to the monodromy, right? That's exactly what I was studying. It takes a connection nabla, maybe maybe I should not have drawn this here. Nabla goes to the transport operator. So we want to understand how to compactify. So we have this map which has exponential behavior, as we saw. We expected our exponential behavior because you're solving an equation. Going from Nabla to transport operator means you're solving the equation Nabla psi equal to 0. In other words, d plus a times psi equal to 0, which is going to have a solution that is transcendental. It depends on some exponential functions. So to understand how this thing behaves at infinity, you need to understand what kind of exponentials appear when you solve this equation. That's what we're trying to understand. So let's try to make that more precise. So there exist compactifications of M dirham and M Betti, which look like this. So if M dirham bar is the compactification, and M dirham bar minus M dirham can be identified with, I think now I can, before I do this, I can finally answer the question about what the eigenvalues of a Higgs field are. So yeah, maybe I should answer that first. It's a good time to do that. So if you have a vector space, so let's say, so toy example. If you have a vector space V together with an endomorphism T, and this gives rise to a polynomial which is determinant of lambda I minus T equal to 0, whose zeros are the eigenvalues of the matrix T. Now what I want to do, well, what is the Higgs field? We're saying let's let this vector space vary with some point which moves in some Riemann surface. And also let's let this endomorphism depend on which direction I move in the Riemann surface. So if I choose a path in the Riemann surface, then I get a well-defined endomorphism, right? So if you now go to X and E phi Higgs bundle, so phi was an endomorphism valued one form, then you can still define the determinant of phi lambda I minus phi. Just formally write it out as you would usually write it out. This will be some polynomial, lambda to the r plus lambda to the r minus 1, which way do I want to number this, S1. Plus lambda equals 0, except that now remember, lambda, this is a matrix of one forms. So lambda to the r is the rth power of a one form. So to make this, for this thing to make sense as a section of some line bundle, I need to figure out where these coefficients should live. So where should S1 live? S1 is just going to be an element of H0 of the Riemann surface with coefficients in omega s. S2 is going to be in omega x squared, and so sk is going to be in omega x tensor k. Right? So let me call this thing the characteristic polynomial of phi. And the characteristic polynomial of phi is really an element in the direct sum of H0 of x omega x to the k from k equals 1 to r. Okay. But except remember now that what are the coefficients of the characteristic polynomial? What is the first coefficient? It's the sum of the eigenvalues. So it's the sum of the lambda i's of the eigenforms, right? So the sum, my assumption that my bundle is an SLRC Higgs bundle. So trace of phi equal to 0. Maybe I should just write this as S1 is equal to trace of phi So that means that the sum really starts at 2. Okay. So this expression, which the direct sum of these cohomology groups, is called the Hitchin base. And just as we have a map from the space of vector spaces, the pairs vector space and endomorphism to the space of polynomials, we have a map from the space of Higgs bundles to the Hitchin base, which takes the characteristic polynomial of a. You have a map. Which I call car to remind you of the characteristic polynomial from M Higgs to this direct sum . So let's note what happens when you set r equal to 2. If I set r equal to 2, I have a rank 2 bundle with a Higgs field. And the characteristic polynomial is just an element of the space of quadratic differentials. So that's why we happen to be looking at quadratic differentials when we're looking at rank 2 equations, because the characteristic polynomial of your Higgs field is a quadratic differential. So this is the guy that's going to be the higher rank generalization of the space of quadratic differentials. And now what do I mean by eigenforms? Well, I can look at the space of solutions to this equation. This is a section of a line bundle over the cotangent bundle of the Riemann surface, which is just a pullback. You can think of that if you want to be precise. Hope I don't get this wrong. This is some section of pi upper star of omega x tensor r, where pi from x dx check. X is the projection. Okay. So I can define the zeros of this guy. It's sitting inside the cotangent bundle of x. I'm going to call this sigma. This is sitting inside dx check and projecting down to x. And this is an R to 1 map, generically, right? So that's my answer to what it means to be to have R forms. At every point in x, you have R 1 form sitting in the fiber. Their order is not well defined, so it doesn't make sense to say, here's a list lambda 1 through lambda r of all the one forms, which are eigenforms of my Higgs field. But it does make sense to speak of the spectral cover. So in other words, points in the Hitchin base, so we know that endomorphisms up to GIT equivalence are the same thing as list of eigenvalues. In other words, if you identify two matrices that have the same eigenvalues, in the same way, points in B correspond to spectral covers. So by spectral cover, I simply mean an R to 1 cover sitting inside the cotangent bundle such that if you sum the elements in each fiber, you get 0. Any questions? Yeah. If it's not SLRC, in general, you should look at points in the Hitchin base parameters, what are called Cameral covers of Cameral covers of the. Of the Riemann surface, which are like Galois covers with Galois group, the wild group of the the wild group of SLRC. And in this case, your, you know, if you pick a representation of your group, then you can produce a spectral cover. So for every representation, you have a spectral cover. But I just want to think about SLRC. So there exist, so as I was saying, there exist compactifications. So the first one is compactification of M dirham, where the complement M dirham minus the divisor infinity, let's call this D, by definition, then D is M Higgs minus the inverse image of 0. This thing is called the nilpotent cone. So look at all matrices whose eigenvalues are non-zero. So look at all Higgs fields whose eigenvalues are non-zero. There's a compactification of M dirham whose boundary points are exactly given by elements in the nilpotent cone. Okay? And if I give you a point, so I don't want to exactly describe how you produce this compactification. Sorry? Ah, yeah, complement of the important one. Sorry. Is everything that's not in an important cone? Let me just put it this way. Take endomorphisms of a vector space and identify two if they have the same eigenvalues. That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's a way to say it, to formulate it in using GIT, and you find that the GIT quotient of the space of matrices will be this list of eigenvalues. What is the intrinsic definition of a spectral cover? Okay, I can define it to be tautologically things that come from this construction. Yeah, I wasn't stating, okay, so it's a sub-variety of the, it's a Riemann surface inside the cotangent bundle which projects R to 1 to X. But that was more like I'm saying you can think of, my point is to say that you can think of this polynomial as really giving you R1 forms. Those one forms are not defined up to ordering. That's sort of the thing that I'm trying to say. Okay. Yeah. So and what's the point of this? Well, if I take an element phi, the divisor infinity is, I apologize again, I didn't complete the sentence. It's this, all Higgs bundles which are not in the nilpotent cone modulo the natural C star action by scaling on Higgs bundles. So I can take any Higgs field and multiply it by C star, and that will produce the same element at infinity. So to make sense of this, I need to explain to you, if I go to infinity in the space of connections, when will I approach a given point in D? Right? So let's pick some point phi in D. Then I claim that the family of connections Nabla 0, let Nabla 0 be any fixed connection then Nabla 0 plus phi over h bar, this family of connections approaches that particular point at infinity. Okay. So I'm going to explain, the point of all this is to explain why do I care about these WKB exponents. Here's one reason. There's a compactification of Mbeti where the complement of the thing at infinity is actions of pi 1 of x on R buildings. Okay. Never mind if that doesn't make sense. Let me just say what this means in the SL2 case. In the SL2 case, let me put this in quotations because it's a very vague statement. R buildings equal to R trees. So they're exactly the kind of pictures that I were drawing, something like that. Now, what does the prefix R mean? The prefix R just means that the set of branches can be very dense in the tree. So you don't have a discrete set of points where the tree sort of breaks into pieces, but you can have a dense set of points along an edge where you have branches coming out, and you can also have an uncountable number of, the valency can be uncountable at any given vertex. So it can be some really wild object, but in any case, there is some object, and let's for a moment just think of it as a metric space, which looks like the pictures that I drew in the beginning. Now, if I have an R tree, if I have pi 1 of x acting on T, some R tree, then I get a function which I'll call nu. Let's call this action rho. So I get nu sub rho, which is a function from pi 1 of x to the real numbers. And now this should start looking familiar. It's related to the WKB exponents, which is defined by nu sub rho of gamma is the infimum of the distance of x from rho of x, where rho is in pi 1. So a more precise statement of the first thing that I wrote in this SL2 case will be the following. The more precise statement is that M Betty bar minus M Betty is the projectivization of the space of such functions. Some vector space of functions, real valued functions on the group. And these actions on R trees are completely determined by their corresponding length functions. If I have such an action, I get a length function. And if I know the length function, in the case of R trees, I can more or less recover the action on of pi 1 on the R tree up to equivalent. So points at infinity in this moduli space correspond exactly to these length functions. So now the question we are asking is, I have this correspondence, the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, from M Betty, sorry, M Dram to M Betty. Yeah? I'm taking the infimum of, this is maybe, let's call this some point T. T is a point in the tree. The row is fixed. Yeah, sorry. Infimum over points in the tree. Apologize. Gamma is an element here. It nu is a function from here to here. A rho of gamma of acting on T. So we have this Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, and we want to understand how it extends to infinity, right? So we know that we have these three moduli spaces. We know that as topological spaces, I can identify M dirham and M by T. So I have M, which is M by T, isomorphic to M dirham. And if I take the Stone-Check compactification of the topological space M, so let's say M bar equal to Stone-Check compactification, of M, well, that's the largest possible compactification and maps to every other compactification. So I get a correspondence M bar maps down to M dirham bar and maps down to M petty bar, right? So I get a many-to-one map, potentially many-to-one map. I get a correspondence which sends elements in the compactification here to elements in the compactification there. And we can actually figure out how to replace this correspondence by an actual map on compactifications, because the only ambiguity, if I have a family of connections going to infinity with H bar in C, then the corresponding monodromy representation depends on which direction in C I take H bar to 0. That's the only ambiguity, right? And so if I get rid of that ambiguity, then this will actually become a map from the on compactifications. So how do I get rid of the ambiguity? I take a real blow up at the divisor at infinity. So ambiguity comes from dependence on direction in C, along which H bar goes to 0 in nabla 0 equals nabla plus H bar. So I can resolve the ambiguity by replacing the divisor at infinity, which was, so this D was M Higgs minus the nilpotent cone divided by C star. But instead of dividing by C star, which is the set of all possible directions in C star, I replace it by R star. So if I go in one particular direction, then I know how the representation goes to infinity. If I change my direction and I cross some Stokes line, then that growth rate at infinity will change. So this means replace M dirham by its real blow up, M dirham quiddle, its real blow up along T. Okay, so M dirham twiddle will be something such that M dirham twiddle minus M dirham is M Higgs minus tar inverse 0 divided by scaling by reals. And so now I have a well-defined map. And the question is, if I'm given some element here, what element, what does it correspond to? But remember, I told you that things at infinity in Betti are more or less determined by these length functions. And determining this length function is nothing but the problem of determining the WKB exponent for the family of connections, nabla 0 plus phi over h bar. So I'm kind of lying there, because when I approach infinity in the Dirac moduli space, I don't have to fix my vector bundle. I could also vary my vector bundle. I could also vary the Higgs field simultaneously. I'm not addressing all those questions. I'm saying that in order to understand this question, the first most simple thing you have to understand is to understand the WKB exponents for this family of connections. So all this is just motivation. Yeah? It's like, I can give you a good analogy. So think of how you compactify affine space, right? You make projective space. The projective space is you throw out the origin, and then you scale by C star. That's the divisor at infinity. So if you look at, if you want to compactify, let's say, affine R space. Yes. But the analogy is that if you have affine R space, you want to compactify the projective R space. Well, if you remove the affine R space, what's left over is projective R minus 1 space. But this guy is like affine R space minus 0 divided by C. It's the exact analogy of that. And yes, to make it precise, of course, you use GIT. So again, I don't know how much of this has been proven in complete generality. So this classical story for Thurston-Teichmuller theory, it's definitely true for SL2R, that the compactification is given by projectivized length functions. That's Thurston's theorem. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's true in more generally, but I'm not sure if this is a theorem or not. So at least it's a. Yes, in the SL2 case, yeah. And that map is exactly the WKB exponent. So if I have this, if I have a Higgs field, I can take some fixed connection. Sorry, I put the zero. I can take some fixed connection and look at this family of connections going to infinity. It doesn't matter where I start. It just matters how I go to infinity. Then I get this WKB exponent. And that WKB exponent is really just a function from pi 1 of x to the real number. And so, all of this that I said is, I was deliberately a little vague because it's just motivation. I'm trying to say why we care about this thing. But I think it's a long way to really understanding this, you know, to really understanding this map. It's not just enough to know the WKB exponent for a fixed bundle and so on. Questions? Yeah. Time do I have? Yes, maybe I just want to write down a statement to summarize what I said. So the motivation for studying this new WKB exponent is that it's a first step toward understanding induced map, this map on compactifications. Okay, that's maybe, that's really what I wanted to say. Okay, so I want to say a quick word about another kind of motivation. Which comes from categorical algebraic geometry. So from a mathematical perspective, you might say it comes from stability conditions and categorical algebraic geometry. From a physics perspective, you could say, at least in the version that we are trying to understand it, it's trying to understand stability in the topological A model of some open Calabi-Yau three-folds. Okay? So each of these spectral covers, if you have a spectral cover sigma to x, it gives rise to a certain three-dimensional manifold. Which is y, it's going to be some conic bundle with discriminant locus sigma. What does that mean? I'm just going to look at affine n space. If locally sigma is given by h of xp equal to 0, then y is locally okay, so it's some three-dimensional Calabi-Yau manifold. It's a Calabi-Yau manifold which is fibered in some way over the Riemann surface because I can project down to x. And all of these structures that we're studying are very closely related to some to the geometry of this Calabi-Yau threefold. So to this geometry, you can associate something called the Fukaya category of Y, which is a differential graded category. It depends on the symplectic and there's a general conjecture that the space of stability conditions on this category, so which I'll just remind you what that is. Yeah? Y is going to be a bundle over the cotangent bundle, whose fibers are P1s. They're given by conic equation, this equation. UV equal to H of XP, where H of XP is the equation of the spectral cover. Spectral cover is sitting inside. U and V are some auxiliary coordinates, which I introduce. UV belong to P is the cotangent fiber, X is the coordinate on the Riemann surface, and U and V are the extra coordinates of the fiber of this map. Is there a canonical? You want to compactify it somehow, or I don't know.
Is it just you're taking a trivial bundle and then defining a Y
I think the issue will arise if you want to compactify this whole thing somehow, then maybe there is some non-trivial geometry. What did I want to say? So what is the philosophy of categorical algebraic geometry? Before I look at this example, it is to say that there are many different contexts which produce categories. For example, you can produce this category from a symplectic manifold whose objects are Lagrangian submanifolds and which maps are given by floor homology. If you have an algebraic variety, you can take the category of vector bundles on it, and there are fancier versions of that, like the derived category of coherent sheaves, and that gives you another example of a category. So the philosophy of categorical algebraic geometry is that there are many different geometric contexts. So algebraic varieties, for example, is a classical geometric context. Symplectic manifolds are another context. Quivers would be another example. And all of these produce differential gated categories. It just means that the HOMs are chain complexes. And from these differential gated categories, you can produce lots of invariants. In fact, you can produce a universal invariant, which is an extended topological field theory. And the point is that a lot of features of the original geometry are already recorded in this DG category of this abstract topological field theory. So for example, from this DG category, I can produce an invariant like HH Hochschild homology of C, which is nothing but which is the same thing as taking this guy and evaluating it on the circle. And if I start with an algebraic variety and I take its category of coherent sheaves, or let's say perfect complexes, and then I apply HH to it, then that will calculate, this map will calculate the direct sum HP of X omega Q of X. Okay. So all sorts of invariants of your original algebraic variety can be encoded in this category. And that's a very powerful idea because it means that you can take something that's defined for algebraic varieties and ask the same question about symplectic manifolds. Or you can take something that's defined for symplectic manifolds and ask whether, you can take something like Gromov-Witten invariants and ask what are the Gromov-Witten invariants of the perfect complexes on X. So that's a general principle. And an incarnation of that principle is what I'm going to tell you now. No more time? Sorry. Okay. Then maybe I continue tomorrow.
Is it a good time to break?
Yeah, I think I can stop now. Yeah.
Okay.
The extended TFT? These will be functors from some Bordism category.
In which space is the top right corner? In which space are all those guys taking values? Yeah.
These are chain complexes.
All in chain complexes. Okay, thank you.
But these functors are functors into DG categories.
Sure.
They map a point to DG categories, to a DG category, and then they map one manifold to chain complexes, and they map two manifolds to maps between chain complexes. So one manifolds go to things like Hochschild cohomology.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions?
In terms of the usual like Hitchens system picture, where you think about things like spectral curves and stuff, is there a description for this CY3Y? Capital Y,
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Capital Y, the CY3 there?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's an example where you can say what it is. For example, in the case where, is there a concrete example for some sigma where you can say what Y is?
Okay, so let me rephrase the question so that I can answer it. I mean, there's lots of questions you could ask about y, right? So the question we are interested in here would be like, what is the Foucault category of y? Okay, that's quite a hard question to understand the Foucault category of some manifold, but there is a way to talk about the Foucault category of y, and this is all very conjectural. It's like work in progress. There's a way to talk about the Foucault category of y in terms of in the following way. What you do is you forget about y, but what you remember is that you have the vibration y to x. Now, the vibration y to x gives you, over each point in x, you can take the Foucault category of the fiber. So you will get a sheaf of categories on your base Riemann surface x. Now, you can just remember that sheaf of categories. The fibers of this map are actually quite simple. The Foucault categories of the fibers are actually categories of type A and if R is the rank of the spectral cover, there'll be Calabi-Yau categories of type AR. So you take the AR quiver and you make it Calabi-Yau 2. So you have some sheaf of categories on X whose fibers are Calabi-Yau 2 categories that you understand fairly well. And now you can ask, can you somehow recover the Foucault category of Y from the sheaf of categories? Now there is a procedure to go from the sheaf of categories. It's again conjectural to produce the Foucault category of Y. And in some cases you can see that that gives you some simple answer. Like the Foucault category of Y should be just the AN Calabi-Yau 3 category or something. That's sort of the philosophy of studying this is to sort of replace this vibration of spaces by a sheaf of categories. And then to that sheaf of categories, we know how to associate a global sections category. The objects in the global sections category will be like generalized versions of Guyot-Omur-Nitzsky spectral networks in the base Riemann surface. And so you can try to explicitly describe those, and you find in some cases that you can describe the global section. And the point of the example was that the Hitchin base is conjecturally sitting inside the space of stability conditions on this category. So that's sort of the wall crossing picture that I drew in the beginning would be in the case of SL2, which is actually, that's another example that's been studied. So Bridgen and Smith have studied this whole setup in the case of SL2. In which case they describe what should be this Foucault category. We don't really know how to compute it symplectically, but it's they describe some category which should be the Foucault, related to the Foucault category of Y. And Smith has shown that it actually embeds into the Foucault category of Y. And they show that the space of quadratic differentials is the space of stability conditions on this category. And that picture that I drew at the beginning is exactly wall crossing in this space of stability conditions.
All right, let's thank Pranav again.